You know, sometimes when crisis hits, it kind of gets us to rethink what we think about what matters most. I mean, what matters really? What matters really? When it really comes down to it, what matters? Now, in good times, I want to ask you, what are things that you kind of get passionate about? Or in the good times, what are things that you think, you know, this really matters? Or maybe in the good times, what are things that you get upset about? Because often what we get upset about shows us what matters most. You know, maybe in the good times, you're like, you know what matters most is like the scores in the game, right? The standings of my team. And I keep track of that. I watch that. That's really important to me. Maybe, you know, when times are good, what matters most for you is like, you know, watching that television series or that new show, and you just can't wait for that season to premiere or that new episode to come, and that just matters so much to you. Maybe, you know, in the good times, what matters most to you is, you know, that video game, and you just love, you know, getting to that next level, and you're just passionate. I gotta do this. Maybe what gets you upset in the good times is like, you know, when they didn't put the tools back where they were supposed to go. You know, it just gets you really fired up, or the house isn't clean and it's not tidy, and you just get upset because that's what matters most when times are good. Well, here's something to ponder. Now imagine if tonight you woke up in the middle of the night and you woke up to your house on fire. Now what matters really in that moment? What matters? Crisis has a way of kind of just reframing or helping us reconsider what matters most. I imagine at that point you're not like, you know, honey, I know the house is burning, but I just got to find out what the scores are. I just got to see the standings. This is really important right now. I'm sure, you know, the house is burning. You're not like, I got to beat this level. I'm just going to play my video games and I got to beat this level right now. You know, I'm sure at that point you're not like, you know what? We just got to clean the house. I know it's burning down, but if my house is burning down, it's burning down clean, right? I mean, what matters really? What matters really? And crisis has a way of causing us to rethink what we think about what matters. You know, maybe there's a doctor's note or you have a doctor's appointment and suddenly, based on the information you find out there, everything changes. You know, how much money you have in the bank and your retirement and what you did for a career, suddenly all those things, do they matter as much as they did before? Crisis has a way of doing this. It also has a way of causing us to kind of think some new thoughts that we haven't thought before. And maybe with the COVID-19, the coronavirus, and some of the other, maybe a different crisis in your life, you're starting to wonder about some things that you haven't wanted to wonder about. You're starting to think about God, and you kind of put God on the shelf, and you didn't really want to consider God. You know, crisis has a way of kind of causing us to think about God. You know, if your vehicle's sliding to the ditch or to a cliff, even the atheists among us might cry out, God, help, right? Crisis has a way of just kind of causing us to think some new thoughts. Maybe you've been considering some things you hadn't considered before regarding faith, regarding God. Maybe you're even praying some prayers that you haven't prayed before. Maybe you've never prayed. And some of the things that are happening in our world with the economy right now, maybe with your job and some things that just are causing uncertainty and fear, you're starting to pray and you've never prayed before. I know crisis has a way of getting us to consider what matters really. What matters in the end? What really, truly matters? I think it's important we should get this right. And so I want to just dive into some scripture to kind of help us gain an understanding of this. Last week, we looked at Joshua, and the story of Joshua is about a man who was taking leadership from Moses, the greatest leader who ever lived. And so this was kind of like uncertain times for him. It was, you know, not only was he taking leadership from the greatest leader, but he was asked, his first job was to lead the people into the promised land, the one task that Moses had failed to do. And so this was just kind of unknown territory, uncertain, and there was fears for Joshua. And he was commanded, be strong and courageous. Just take the next step and follow me. And today I want to look at kind of the other side. You know, here's the people of Israel going to Jericho, the land of Canaan, to take over the promised land. But I want to look at the other side. How did the people of Jericho feel as they faced this kind of impending doom, this nation that was coming to bring disaster on their city? And we're going to look at that side through the eyes of a woman named Rahab. And we're going to see, as she kind of answers this question in her own life, what matters really, what it is that truly matters. In fact, really what we're going to find out is that it's only one thing. There's one thing that matters. The story picks up in Joshua chapter 2, and we read that, then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. Go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho, right? And now here's a little map of what the land looked like. Egypt's down here. And so the Israelites had traveled up around, and they'd come up around by the Dead Sea where everybody floats. And they come up through the land of the Amorites. That's going to be important a little bit later. And they're kind of camped out right here, about 8 kilometers from the Jordan River. And 8 kilometers on the other side of the Jordan River is Jericho, right here. So it's kind of like the distance from Three Hills to Troshu, with the Jordan River right in the middle. They're not that far apart. And they're seeing each other. And so they sent spies across the Jordan River. Now, the spies went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. Now, we're a church that's for the whole family. And I'm really excited and happy that all you families are watching this right now, because parents, I'm going to let you explain what Rahab's day job was, or what maybe her night job, whatever. You know, all we need to know for our purposes is that Rahab wasn't the most righteous or sinless person in the planet. And she was, you know, doing this thing. Anyways, so Rahab, you know, why would they go to her house? What was that about? Well, it wasn't necessarily because she was a prostitute, but Rahab, we find out later in the story, she had her house on the city wall, which means it was close to an escape route. Also, her house was probably like the local tavern, the local hotel. It was a place where locals would gather and they would have conversation. And so for the spies, it was a great place to get information. And so they got information at this place, but also as a quick escape if they got caught. Well, the king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent his message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. Maybe Rahab, you don't know what they're doing, but we found out some information, and maybe you're kind of innocent and you're not sure what's going on. You don't know how dangerous these men are, but we do, so bring them to us. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. Aha, the story kind of picks up a little bit here. She'd hidden them, she's changed sides, she's a traitor. And she said to the men, the king's men, yes, the men, the spies came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went, but go after them quickly. Quickly, you may catch up with them, right? The Jordan River's only 8 kilometers away. They can get there pretty fast. You better hurry up and go get them. But the text tells us she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out, that's the men, the king's men, chasing down the spies, set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. You know, Rahab kind of plays innocent. She kind of plays dumb, right? She's like, I don't know, you know, but really she knows. A crisis has just shown up on her doorstep. The people of Israel are on the other side of the Jordan, and she knows some things are happening. She's rethinking some thoughts. The crisis in front of her has caused her to rethink some of her own faith. And we see that next. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. I know the Lord's given. How do you know, Rahab? How do you know God's given the land? I mean, they've been wandering in the desert for 40 years. How do you know? And our whole nation, our whole city is just melting in fear. Why? Well, she goes on and says, here's why I know, and here's why we're melting in fear. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea, how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt. We've heard the story of Moses and Pharaoh, and we've heard what happened to the Egyptians, the superpower of the world, and how their economy was decimated, and they were brought to their knees by Moses. And we know how, as the Israelites came out, that God parted the Red Sea, and you walked on dry ground. Well, that was like 40 years ago. We've been wandering the desert, but there's more. There's more, she goes on. It says, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites. Remember the Amorites they passed through? The two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. See, as the Israelites were traveling over to the promised land. They kind of came up through the land of the Amorites. And they sent a delegation. They said, hey, to the king of the Amorites, said, listen, we're just going to Canaan and to some land that we're going to conquer, I guess. And we just want some safe passage on your roads. We're not going to disturb you. You don't disturb us. But the king of the Amorites said, not a chance. And he gathered up his entire army and he attacked the Israelites. And obviously the Israelites responded and they completely destroyed the Amorites. And so here's the people in the city of Jericho, and they say, we've heard about what you did to the superpower, Egypt, how you brought them to their knees and decimated their entire country. We heard how you parted the Red Sea, how you defeated the kings of the Amorites. And we know, I mean, we're like, shoot, we're next. We're next. And so we are melting in fear because of what is happening. We are melting in fear. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear and everyone's courage failed because of you. Everyone's courage has failed. We are wallowing in fear in the city of Jericho. Now, up to this time, she's been talking about we. We as a people in Jericho are wallowing in fear. We are scared. We are afraid. We have no courage. But what she says next changes from we to an I, and she declares, she puts her stake in the ground of what she thinks is true. She says, because our courage failed because of you, for the Lord your God is God. This is her stake in the ground. The Lord your God is God. God in heaven above and God on the earth below. The Lord your God is God. This is an epic statement by Rahab. You know, as a good Canaanite woman, she would have grown up serving the gods of her people. She would have been in the religion of her people. Some of the personal names of the gods she would have grown up serving were Baal, the god of the Canaanites, Asherah, the god of the Canaanites, Marduk and Ishtar, which are gods of the Canaanites and later the Babylonians. These are the gods that, and probably a dozen or more other gods that as a Canaanite woman, she would have grown up serving. And in this one statement, she says, listen, those aren't gods at all. In fact, I renounce everything I've grown up with. I'm in this crisis. I'm thinking some new thoughts and I put my faith in the God who is in heaven, and he's God in heaven, and the God who is God on the earth below. You know, some of the gods of the Canaanites, they might have been the god, you know, of rain, or the god of fertility, or the god of the earth or the sea, or the god of the heavens and the stars. And yet she says, listen, there's one God who's God over all of those gods. Those are faux gods. They're fake gods. They're not real. There is one God, the God who truly is. And she places her stake in the ground. This is more than just Rahab saying, I want to save my own skin. She's saying, this is where I place my faith in the God who is. And Rahab did just that. Crisis has a way of kind of getting us to think some thoughts we have maybe haven't thought about. And as Rahab faced the crisis in front of her, she placed her stake in the ground. And she goes on and gets a little more personal, and she says, now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. I would have been kind to you. Now will you be kind to me? I've placed my faith in the God who is. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. And the men said, our lives for your lives. If you don't tell about what we're doing here, if you don't rat us out, we will save you when we come and take the land. And you know, Rahab would let the men down the city wall because her house was on the city wall, and she let them out of a window. And instead of telling them to go to the Jordan, she said, instead of going east towards the Jordan, go west into the hills. Jericho was right on the plains, right before some massive, massive hills. And she said, go the wrong way because you're going to hide up in the hills until the pursuers are done. And after 3 days, they'll come back to the city. And then you can go and be safe on the other side of the Jordan. And we will wait. But in their waiting, the spies had said, listen, here's how it's going to work. When we come attack the city, we won't know who your family is. We won't know who to protect. So here's the way it's going to work. Your family, the people that want to be saved, they have to be in your house. And if they're in your house, we will protect them. They will be saved. But if they go out of the house, their blood is on their own head because we can't, it's going to be war. We won't know what or who to save. And so this was kind of like self-isolation before there was self-isolation. I mean, nobody left the house. I mean, if you were out of toilet paper, you're like, is it toilet paper in my life? I'm staying in the house, right? No one left the house. And they waited and they waited. And as history tells us, the people of Israel would cross the Jordan. They would come to the city of Jericho. And in an unconventional way, rather than attacking the city in conventional ways, in an unconventional way, they just walked around the city for 7 days, once a day. And on the seventh day, seven times on that day. And after the seventh time, the walls of Jericho were brought down. And because the people of Canaan, the people in the city of Jericho, were already wallowing in fear, they had no courage to fight, and they were completely destroyed. But check out what Joshua says. Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, he said, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out. Bring her out and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her. So the young men went and went in and brought out Rahab, her father and mother, her brothers and sisters, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her entire family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. Rahab was saved. Her entire family was saved. An entire family was saved because one person decided to put her stake in the ground with the God who is. One person decided to respond in faith, and she was saved. Now, maybe at this point in the story, you're thinking, okay, well, what about the entire city of Jericho? I mean, is God just against the people of Jericho? Does God play favorites? Does he pick one nation over another? And is God for some and against some others? I mean, how does God really do this? How does this work with God? And, you know, there's an interesting part in the story where Joshua meets a man, and it's found in Joshua chapter 5, and it shows us the heart of God when it comes to people, all people. And it says, now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and asked, are you for us or for our enemies? Are you in our corner? Are you on our team? Are you on our side or are you on their side? Are you against us or for us? Because if you're for us, join the ranks. If you're against us, then, let's fight right now. And, in the next verse, we'll find out that this man that they meet is actually a messenger from God. He's actually the commander of the Lord's army. Now, we would imagine, since the nation of Israel are the chosen people of God, that a representative of God would say, well, obviously, I'm on your team, right? These are the people of God, and those other Canaanites, they're just godless. I'm against them. But listen to what the messenger of God says, and I think this shows us the heart of God towards people. He says, neither. You want me to play sides? God doesn't play sides. It's not that he's against one over the other. He replied, neither, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Then Joshua fell down, fell face down to the ground in reverence before this man. Neither. God says, I'm on neither side. I don't pick sides. See, the one thing we have to learn about God, and I think Rahab shows us this, is God doesn't play favorites. He doesn't pick one over the other. God is for people. God is for people, which tells us this, that God is for you. God is for you. God absolutely loves you, that there's nothing that you have to do to try to earn his love, or, if I just do some more good things, maybe God will be on my side, or maybe if I don't do some bad things, God will be on my side. God is already for you. And the person Rahab shows us this. Who is Rahab? Rahab was an outsider. She wasn't a Jewish person or an Israelite. She wasn't part of the chosen people of God. She was an outsider. On top of that, she was a prostitute. Not exactly the cleanest or most righteous, or she was far from perfect. And yet God said, I will save you because you put your faith in the God who is. You put your faith in me. Here's what I want you to know. God is for you. God is for you. There's another story in the Old Testament that just shows this so clearly. God is for people. God is for you. The prophet Jonah in the Old Testament, he was commanded by God to go to the city of Nineveh, a godless, wicked city. And God said, listen, I want you to preach to the Ninevites and tell them that my judgment's coming and they need to repent. Well, the people of Nineveh repented of what they'd done wrong. They repented, and so God relented from bringing his judgment. So much so, God saved them so much so that the prophet Jonah was mad at God, because Jonah, as a Jewish Israelite, realized the Ninevites are actually my enemies. And so he wanted to see the destruction of the city. He wanted to see the wrath and the judgment of God fall on this city. But God shows us in that story, God is for people. And when the people repented, God relented. And we see this in Rahab as well. Rahab repented. She turned her faith over to God, and she was saved. And I am convinced, listen, I am convinced that the entire city of Jericho could have been saved, because God is for people. God is for people, and I'm convinced the whole city could have been saved, but it was only Rahab who turned to God in faith. You know, the story of Rahab really shows us something that we cannot miss. When we kind of rethink and we relook at what really matters, I mean, what really matters, and Rahab shows us there's one thing. There's absolutely only one thing in the end that really matters, and it's this: simple faith in the God who is simply saves. Simple faith in the God who is simply saves. Every single time someone puts their faith in the God who is, they are saved. You know, times of crisis often get us to kind of reconsider what we think is most important. And for Rahab, she came to reconsider what was most important in her life. And as she faced a crisis, as she faced the impending doom of her entire city, she decided to think some new thoughts. And she decided to put her faith in the God who is. And you know, Rahab could have, you know, been like the people of Jericho. Their fear just caused them to melt in fear, to wallow in their fear. It didn't bring about any benefit for them. But for Rahab, as she saw the uncertainty of the future, as she saw the impending doom and the disaster and the crisis that was in front of her, she allowed the fear that it caused in her, she allowed it to drive her to faith in the God who is. And I wonder, what about you? As you face the current crisis in our world, the pandemic of coronavirus, maybe there's another crisis. Maybe it's a doctor's note or another, different information that's just causing you to rethink some new thoughts. It's causing some uncertainty in your future and maybe even some fear. Will you just wallow in your fear as the people of Jericho did, and it benefits nothing? Or will you, like Rahab, put your stake in the ground and say, I place my faith in the God who is, in the God who is, and would you be saved? You know, since we're already thinking some new thoughts, I want to kind of push us a little bit further, maybe a little further than some of us are comfortable with. You know, there's a greater crisis on our hands than coronavirus right now. You have a bigger problem in front of you than COVID-19. You have a bigger problem in front of you than even the economy or your loss of job. You know, the coronavirus is a pretty serious thing, but you know, there's a greater crisis, and it's the disease of sin, which leads to death. And each of us have to wrestle that one to the ground. You know, what are we gonna do with sin and death? Because the truth is, we could escape the coronavirus in a year or two. We could look back and say, made it through that one, right? We could escape the coronavirus. We could escape the crisis that's at hand. Maybe the doctors know it comes back and it's not true. We can escape, but what are you gonna do about your sin? And what are you gonna do about death? Because if it's not the coronavirus that gets us, it's gonna be cancer, it's gonna be a disease down the way, it could be a car accident, maybe it's just plain old age, but something is gonna get us. And are you safe? Are you safe even in death? Even in death. You know, God sent his son Jesus many years ago. He sent his son Jesus to take our sin, to take our disease of sin, which leads to death. And Jesus was nailed to a cross and he took the payment of our sin. He died in your place because God is for you and he won your salvation. And Jesus paid the price of our sin, but he did not stay dead. God raised Jesus from the dead. And when God raised Jesus from the dead, the power of sin, the power of your sin, and the power of death were broken because sin had no hold on Jesus. And what are you gonna do about that disease? Will you place your faith in the God who is, in the person and the work of Jesus, because God is for you? Are you gonna place your faith in him? You know, just a few days ago, this past week, I was doing some personal devotions. And there's a verse that kind of just hit me. Jesus was talking in John chapter 6. And some Jews came to Jesus and they said, Jesus, what must we do to do the works God requires? I mean, this is a question all of us ask, because at the end of the day, we want to know that when we stand before God, this life is past, we stand before God, you know, we want to know, are God and me good? Am I good with God? Is God good with me? Are there some works that God requires? I want to make sure I'm doing those works so that when I get to the end, I know that God and me are good. Because in that moment, it won't matter how many kids you had, whether you had a husband or a wife, whether you, you know, had a great retirement or a poor one, or you had money in the bank or no money. What's the only thing that's going to matter at that moment is, am I good with God? And the Jews were kind of wondering, surely God requires something. What's the work that God requires? And you know what Jesus' response was? He said this: the work of God is this, to believe in the one that he has sent. The work of God is simply this, to believe in the one he sent. And the one God sent is Jesus. To believe in Jesus. It's not, you know, you got to do enough good things and not so many bad things, and then God says, that's the work I require. The work he requires is this, belief. Simple faith. The faith that Rahab had as well. And you know, about 30 or 40 years later, the Apostle Paul would come along and he kind of teased this out a little bit to the church in Rome. In Romans chapter 10, the Apostle Paul says this: if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. If you believe, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. You know, crisis often gets us thinking in some new ways, thinking some thoughts we hadn't thought before. And maybe for you, you've never put your faith in Jesus. And you're starting to think some new thoughts. And maybe someone sent you this video, or you kind of came across it accidentally, or you're listening on a podcast and you're kind of saying, I'm already thinking some new thoughts. And this has struck you, and God is working in your life right now. And you're wondering, is this my day? My Rahab day, where I place my stake in the ground and say, I'm putting my life in the hands of God. I'm putting my faith in the hands of God. Because what matters really is only one thing. At the end, only one thing matters. Have you put your faith in the God who is? Have you placed your faith in the God who is? And if God is working on you right now and you feel that tension even inside of you, and you're saying, maybe today's the day, would you allow your fear not just to be something you wallow in, but to allow this moment to drive you to place your faith in the God who is? You know, for those of us who do walk with God, for those of us who believe, you know, we face crisis a little differently, don't we? We don't face crisis with fear in the same way, because we already know that God has won the victory in Jesus. We have hope that no matter what comes, whether it's disease or famine or life or death, that we are safe in the person of Jesus, that we are already saved. But you know, along the journey of walking with Jesus, sometimes we can get distracted. And maybe even you as a follower of Jesus, you're just kind of getting distracted. You know, we'd never say, well, you know, I'd never follow Baal. I'd never worship another god. But you know, the god Baal, he was the god of fertility, which was the god of rain, who brought fertility on the land, which would produce crops and children. And so, you know, this was prosperity for them. Now, maybe we don't worship the god Baal, but in what ways do we chase after prosperity, and the economy would do this, and my job would do this, and my retirement, and my investments, and we can get distracted in our journey of following Jesus. And yet this crisis and different crises, they sometimes come and they get us to kind of rethink about what we think is most important. And I want to encourage you as a follower of Jesus, don't let this moment be squandered. Allow this season in our culture and our time to be a time where you kind of reconsider what is most important. And Rahab does this for us as well. You know, for Rahab, she was not saved alone. Rahab was saved with her entire family, which was actually more than her family. It was cousins, aunts, uncles, her sphere of influence, her servants. And, you know, often as a church, we've talked about pray for four. With your sphere of influence, those around you, your family, friends, think of four people you know who don't yet know God and start praying for them. Start praying for them. They would come to know that faith in God is the only way we have salvation. And start praying for them. Another thing we've talked about as a church is, you know, having make it more conversations. Daily, normal conversations that we just say, how can we take this a little bit further? How can we make it a little bit more? You know, we're used to talking about the weather or sports, and how can we take that a little further to spiritual things, to things of God? Well, the good thing is, no one's talking about sports these days because there's no new sports. But there's a lot of people that are thinking some new thoughts. And as you think of those who are in your sphere of influence, and you've been placed perfectly to have the greatest impact for the kingdom, how could you be investing in them through prayer? And how could you be investing in them through acts of kindness and acts of love and through conversation? Because a lot of people are wondering things that maybe they haven't wondered before, or thinking thoughts that maybe they haven't thought about before, or even contemplating God. And it's been a long time since they have done that. So would you, as followers of Jesus, take this opportunity to impact the kingdom, to impact the kingdom, to shine your light, to show those around you that faith in the God who is saves every single time. You know, Rahab was saved, and it wasn't a second-class saving or, you know, a kind of saving. When God saves, he fully saves. There's no second-class Christians or second-class children of God. You know, Rahab, in her story, it shows this, that when God saves, he fully saves. Rahab would meet a Jewish man named Salmon, and they would get married, and they would have a son named Boaz. And Boaz would meet a woman, a Moabite woman, a person who was outside the people of God, who came to faith in God. He would marry a woman named Ruth. And Boaz and Ruth would have a son named Obed, and Obed would have a son named Jesse, and Jesse would become the father of David. David, the David, the King David, King of Israel, the David and Goliath David, the greatest king in Israel's history. And you get this, David's great-great-grandmother was a prostitute, outsider, Rahab, who was saved because she simply put her faith in the God who is, the God who is. And hundreds of years later, the Messiah would be born, Jesus. And the Messiah would come from the line of David, which means the Messiah would come from the line of a prostitute, outsider, Gentile, undeserving woman, Rahab. And when she placed her faith in the God who is, she was saved. And it wasn't a partial saving, fully saved. God saves. Would you place your faith in the God who is? You know, often times of crisis gets us thinking in ways we haven't thought about before. And maybe for you, you're thinking some new thoughts. And I want to encourage you, would you not allow this time to be squandered? Whether you're a follower of Jesus or maybe not yet a follower of Jesus, do not squander this time. There's a crisis in front of you. Let the crisis drive you to the one thing, the only thing that matters, faith in the God who is. I know as a church, we want to just encourage you kind of to dive into the message, dive into the scripture a little more deeply. And so what we've done is we've created some questions, and you can go online to the sermon series page, and there's some discussion questions. And some of the discussion questions for this week are, you know, crisis has a way of helping us reconsider what's most important. How has a crisis, maybe a different crisis, maybe COVID-19, how has a crisis changed what you view as most important? Maybe you want to discuss that with your friends or your family right now, or maybe on a text group or online messaging group. You know, the second question, this is another question just from the many other questions that are on our discussion question list, is in the last few days or weeks, have you thought some new thoughts about God or prayed some new prayers? Maybe you haven't been praying and you're starting to pray, or maybe you're praying some new prayers you've never prayed before. If so, what are they? Just discuss those with those who are around you. You know, simple faith in the God who is simply saves. Would you, would we, as the people of God, maybe if you're not yet in the people of God, would we not squander this time, but allow this time to drive us to the one thing, the only thing that matters? Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your goodness, even as shown in the person Rahab. As we've learned today, she was an outsider. She was not, the most righteous person. And yet, God, you saved her when she simply put her faith in you. And Father, I pray that for those of us who are living today and we have a crisis and sometimes that causes us to fear, that we would not allow our fear to just cause us to melt and wallow in our fear, but that it would drive us to faith in you. That we would, as Rahab did, place our stake in the ground and put our faith in the God who is. We pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.